Well, good morning, everyone. I'm really going to do this. So, good morning.
Good morning.
I definitely appreciate everyone stopping by. This being the last morning of the conference. Hopefully, everyone's had a good show. And I knew the Madrid nightlife would take a toll on attendance. So, I'm assuming you guys are the hardy, the few, the people that really want to see some hardware. So, thank you for coming this morning to hear the story of the cluster in a box. I'm John Lovall. I'm a principal program manager in the Windows Server Group at Microsoft. My responsibility for about the last 3 years has been to work with the hardware industry to bring this solution to the market. Not just to the market, but actually design. And I'll talk a little bit more about what that means, because we're not really just highlighting something that has showed up of interest. We actually were very deeply involved in the specification design, the overall system, and part of this session is you'll learn why. So I'm going to talk about a few things that you may not expect to see in a level 300 session. For example, I'm going to talk a little bit about the market, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the business. And hopefully you'll understand why. In terms of level 300, we'll be talking about the hardware. So this is, I won't be talking about how to set up a cluster. I won't be showing you PowerShell on how to configure Virtual Machine Manager. There are lots of sessions on that, and I have some references at the end that will tell you all about the configuration of the software. This is something different. This is about the hardware, and this is about the server, and this is about how Microsoft has been working with the industry to, in some sense, reimagine what the standard volume server really needs to be. So I'm going to tell you that, and I'm going to describe some of the hardware coming out. Just talking with a few of you before the show, we have a sort of a wide range. I think there are some people here that are just hearing about what a cluster in the box is. There are some people here that have already started deploying some, and some people have been working with clusters for quite some time. So it's quite a range. What I'm hoping is, with the size of crowd we have, we can just come up afterwards, see some of the hardware. Where I plan to go deep would be about the hardware itself. Please ask anything you want about what's in the box. We know quite a bit about it, and love to share more about it. So I'll be telling you about the boxes themselves, what's new this year, about some customer applications, because one of the areas that we want to make sure is clear is where would these be used, because it's a fairly broad experience, but I'll show you something about a customer case that you might be able to resonate with. And then finally, in R2, there are some features that you may have already seen, but of course you can always go back and reference the sessions that make these systems even more interesting, new configurations. And I'll be telling you some detail about that, including some configurations that you may even want to go back and try and match some numbers that we've seen just to see if it's of interest to you. All right? So with that, let's get going. So first, a volume platform for availability. What's all that about? This slide tries to summarize where we were last year. So last year at TechEd 2012 was the first introduction of this project, really. We talked about the reason it was important. With the introduction of 2012, Server 2012, the problem we were trying to solve, and indeed we had been working with the industry to produce a number of boxes that you could actually see and physically see. We've come a long way since then, but this section of the talk is designed to give you an idea of what we're trying to do. In some sense, Microsoft is unique in that we may be about the only company that's really interested and capable of trying to create a wave in the industry about something like a server. There's work going on in the cloud, of course. There's lots of ways people are inventing and reinventing the rack. People are disaggregating, people are redefining standards in the large data center. And you heard a lot about that in the keynote this week. However, there's another side to hardware. And it's the high volume of servers that we actually buy for our businesses that won't be in the cloud, at least not for a while. Quick show of hands, who here in the next 12 to 24 months is planning to buy some new hardware for their business? I imagine it's everybody. There we go. And that's the other side of the cloud. The cloud is an amazing transformation. And you've seen the possibilities, and you've seen where Microsoft wants to take it. However, there's a flip side, and that's about all the rest of the hardware that's purchased in all the many businesses that run day in, day out, that probably won't be moving everything to the cloud for a while. For example, if I had to ask you, how many people here believe that most businesses will not have servers on premise in the next 3 years? That's what I thought. In fact, you could argue, say, I mean, who here will believes that in 10 years most businesses will not have servers on premise? Yeah, it's a stretch, right? And I think what is true is that even if you had an argument about whichever way you stood on the future, it's uncertain. There's a lot changing, and when things change, things are unexpected and things develop in certain ways that it's hard to predict. So one of the ways that Microsoft has been involved in the server has been to reimagine, well, what would a server on-premise look like? What does it need to be in the age of a cloud OS? And basically, cluster in a box is what we believe will be the high-volume server across businesses in general in the era of the cloud. That we have to match a lot of characteristics of the cloud, the availability, the ease of use, and there has to be sort of a landing pad. And that's what we think this really is. So more about it. Let me step back to Server 2012 for those of you that are just getting into the story and kind of remind you about where we were. So sort of a little quick reminder. But in 2012, one of the key unadvertised features of the release was, in some sense, the way we did it. So if we think back to when we first introduced all of the features in 2012, part of the story was that we did this release completely different than any previous Windows Server release. Previous Windows Server releases, we started with the technology. A lot of smart people at Microsoft, a lot of smart people in the industry we work with, we have a very strong idea of where technology needs to go. Previous releases, we would ask all the technology teams to create roadmaps and create their vision of where their technology needed to go for the next release. Work for 3 years, come out with a release, and then we'd stand back just before release about the last 6 months and see what it added up to and see what kind of solutions you could build using all this new technology. It's a great way to advance the technology support. It's a really limited way to produce working solutions. So for 2012, the starting point actually was completely different. We started out by asking, what do customers need? What solutions are required? And then we went to the technology teams and said, what do you need to do to fulfill this promise to the customer? So that was the starting point. One of the big areas was continuous availability. And this tells you a little bit about the research that was done. So for primary research, we surveyed thousands of customers, pulled in data, analyzed it. And this was broad-based. We weren't looking necessarily for an answer, for a specific answer. We were looking for sort of what the customers told us. One of the dominant themes in all of the feedback, small business to large business, global, was availability. Had risen not just as a nice-to-have, who doesn't like uptime, but it rose as a critical table stakes requirement. And it was resounding. It was, you know, it was remarkable. Remarkable to the point where one of the five key investment pillars for Windows Server 2012 was availability. And investment pillar is a significant thing for a release. We have thousands of people working on Windows Server. When you're one of the five key investment areas, you have hundreds of engineers working on this product for extended periods of time. You have executive focus. You have marketing focus. It's a big deal. Availability rose to the top. At that point, we asked, well, why? Why now? Why is this the era of availability? So two answers came up. One was virtualization. It became clear that virtualization had turned the corner from an interesting technology that people were trying to figure out how it suited their business to really a timetable. People were really planning when they would virtualize and how they would do it, what kind of hardware. Great use, great story, great convenience, great efficient use of hardware. However, it had been long enough where people realized, that's great. However, if I have all of my workloads running now on a single piece of hardware, if I lose that single piece of hardware, I can lose my entire department, my entire business will go down at once. So you need an availability solution. The other part that we found was storage. The density of storage, of course, had increased, and the usage of storage had increased. However, the amount of storage you could put into a single 2U or 3U server component had grown to tens of terabytes. Really, almost without doing any special ordering or configuring, you would end up with enough data in a single box to drive an entire department, an entire business. And if you lose access to that, of course, you now lose access to your entire business. So available storage rose up at the same time. Meanwhile, there's actually been another aspect that's become clear. And that's this notion of it's becoming more of a reimagining of the server that people will use day in, day out in their business. And that's the notion of the cloud. So the cloud has highlighted a lot of very interesting features. Availability, ease of use, high number of features for a reasonable cost that you can pay incrementally. These are becoming new expectations for people in the server business. So highly available server is actually starting to show up as kind of the flip side of the cloud. That if you're going to be working with the cloud, you want to be able to have a system that really can interface well with it and provide you a future stable foundation for connecting with that technology. And a highly available, easy to install server is really what's surfacing as kind of the sweet spot of where the market's going. So those three things together pointed us to it. So we did the work. We did the work in Windows Server to do as much as we could for availability. This went from a single node through multiple nodes in Windows Failover Clustering to even, this is where Hyper-V Replica, for example, for those of you familiar with that feature, came as a disaster recovery solution. But thinking in terms of the customer first did point us in some new directions. For example, what would you say here would we have identified as the number one single cause of downtime in Windows servers? Anyone? Memory fault? Okay, it could be. Anyone else? Number one single cause of downtime. Network? Turns out, change? I'll give it close. Patches. Microsoft. Basically, Patch Tuesday and the reboots associated with those patches was the number one single cause of downtime from the surveys of the customers that we talked to about availability. Which is interesting, because it turns out that no one, if we had followed the technology approach, there would not have been a single technologist that would have said, you know, we're really, really interested in this team and working on the patching solution. However, because it was driven as a customer requirements, this is where Clusterware updates came from. So it gives you an idea of the kinds of features that came together when we started talking about a solution as opposed to yet more technology that could deal with availability. So we did our part. A lot of investment, and it continues even with the R2 release. So the problem. So the problem we saw was that in the marketplace, and this slide summarizes kind of the spectrum of systems available, in the marketplace it had grown up around two ends of the spectrum. The blue squares in this one. On the left is traditional server. Standard server, the kind of thing you know very well what to buy. Everyone usually has their favorite. It's almost a commodity. There's not an availability story with that. If you want availability with Windows Server, you jump over to the right side of the screen. And that one is failover clustering. And for that one, you had to build it with multiple servers. Storage was always an issue, and starting in 2008, the storage options were pretty much limited to SANs. So it was expensive, typically relegated to the high-end enterprise, but you get a lot of features. You get advanced replication features, statistics, analytics, monitoring, everything you'd expect from a high-end enterprise solution. What was missing was the middle box in orange. And if you can see on the bottom axis, there's two ways that scales. One's cost, and the other one fundamentally is complexity. So cost and complexity, what we needed was something that a small business or a branch office, basically a volume purchaser of servers, could both afford and understand. And not just understand how to run, but even understand how to buy. What had happened in the last basically 15 years or more of the industry is availability has become a high-end feature set. And that's not just a little thing about describing the products. That's a very deep industry ingrained issue. From all the way from the way the boxes are designed, from the cost assumptions about what the customers can afford, to the divisions and the business units that they're in, all the way to the customer base, availability has grown up as a high-end feature, only affordable by people that really need it. So what we had to do is we had to work with the industry and basically define a new category, this middle category, that was availability, but for the rest of us, where the cost was not 4 to 5x, but actually maybe 1-point-something x, where where there was an ease of use, the ability to start up a cluster quickly, have an out-of-box experience that hid most of the complication. This was the challenge, and this is what we started working with the industry a few years back to create. and been working ever since, and some of the results that you'll see here are now coming out in the marketplace. So, what did we tell the industry? One key thing about it was, it was not a specification. We did not come out and say, we want this box, we want this size, and we have a very specific idea of what this looks like. The goal of this actually was to produce the same level of choice as in normal servers, the same value add from the partners building the systems, the same choices and form factors that you have today. To really create a change in the industry, you have to be able to come in across the board and let people simply have the same choice. In terms of the technology shift, I liken this to a couple of other ones that happened previously. In the 80s to 90s, there was multiprocessing. At first, a niche solution. Today, it just happens. You don't really think about it. You simply ask for the number of sockets and the number of cores. Networking. At first, prior to the internet explosion, it was a fairly esoteric, high-end thing to have highly networked systems. Today, it's basically built in. It's disappeared in some sense. We see is the same thing now happening with availability. A lot of complication in the technology. What we now see is moving to a volume solution where it can disappear. It takes a lot of work. We have the work that we did in the Microsoft and the Windows Server OS, and the partners now we are asking to kind of do the same thing. So a few key areas. So what do we mean by availability? So really what we said was we're looking for, and this is the goal, not a hard requirement, the ability to survive the failure of any single component in the box and its repair. And basically the goal was to get as close to that as possible. So, for example, you come up with redundant power supplies. You have blades that, if they fail, you can actually remove from the box, have the box continue to run, at least for some specified period of time, and put proper cooling, and allow the replacement and the reinstallation of the blade. So you go through a number of things like that. It may not be perfect. Depending on the system, you may or may not have single components, such as a mid-plane or back-plane, that requires the box to be brought down fully. There, we recommended that they minimize the number of active components on any of those single points of failure, simply to extend the MTBF so that it was not a practical problem. The middle box, simplicity, and this was the key. We were looking for ways to fundamentally hide the complexity. Failover clustering is complex. It's been made a lot simpler in the software, but fundamentally there's a lot of components to it. Cables, networking connections, and we found in our research is that typically it would take the standard user about 3 to 4 hours to set up a cluster if they made no mistakes. If they made a mistake, they would take about the same length of time to discover the mistake and fix it. And we looked at common sources of mistakes. Clearly there was a software setup, so a lot of the work was done to replace the setup utilities and control panels with wizard-like approaches. The other one was cabling. Miscabling a network connection, miscabling a storage solution was just as much of a problem as misconfiguring the domain controller. So by getting everything in one chassis, part of the goal of this is to be able to deliver to the customer something that you simply turn on, do minimal configuration, and it runs, and you don't have to know really about clustering for mainstream usage. And then finally, the bottom is just as important as the other two. This goes to the idea that if you want a server, you want a choice of products. So flexibility, number of PCIe slots, the number of networking choices, all the way to the bottom of opening up new markets, office-level acoustics and power. We're looking for this to be the volume solution for small businesses, branch offices, as well as larger enterprises. You really need some choices where you can run this in small, cool, quiet areas like underneath desks. So all of these became the things we would talk about. On the right side is the sample diagram. We were always very careful to call it sample. The key thing about this is it shows the essential elements you need for a failover cluster. You need multiple nodes, and you need clusterable storage. The clusterable storage we showed here was direct attached. And the reason we emphasized direct attached was because it was new. Starting with Windows Server 2008, we disallowed direct attached storage as a clusterable storage solution for all the right reasons. There were many better solutions on the market. For a high-end market, it made a lot of sense simply to use them. For this, we needed to bring back simple, inexpensive storage solutions. So that's why with 2012, we brought in Storage Spaces as a clusterable in-box software storage virtualization solution. And while at the same time, we also worked with the industry. I'll mention a little bit later, LSI has produced a version of their mega RAID called Synchro CS that brings back clustering. And it was a new set of requirements, a new change to make that happen. But that's why we're emphasizing this here, because often, as many of you know, storage is the most expensive component in building a system like this. So we had to solve that problem to give more choice in how you can build a cluster. We got a little bit deeper than that. A lot of questions came up about, great, we can produce systems in this configuration, but what are the key scenarios that we think we're going to be selling at first, and what are the requirements for those scenarios in terms of the hardware? So while we ultimately believe that this technology will simply be a mainstream way to buy servers, we have to realize that when you first start out, you have to target certain markets and understand exactly how to mate the products with those markets. So this gives an idea about what our advice was for each of the two main scenarios that we saw for this box. The first is standard storage. So high availability storage server has a certain set of requirements. The other one is a virtualization appliance. This one, think of it as everything in a box that you would need to run a small business, to run a branch office. There are different requirements for the different components, and it's important to actually read down and see what kinds of things make a difference when you're talking about one versus the other. Another implication of this chart is that there's actually been some convergence lately. There used to be quite a spread between what you would consider a storage, an advanced storage server, hardware, and a server. What's happened is that over time, and I'll talk a little bit more about this, especially when I go through to show some of the examples here, that there's been a convergence, that the number of changes that actually exist between storage hardware and server hardware have almost gone away. And I'll tell a little bit more about what I mean by that in just a few minutes. But if you can see here, the key things would be CPU. So for storage, really, it's not a heavy CPU user, except for dedupe. So when we explain for when you're producing a storage server, you have to think about, well, in general, low memory considerations. You can lighten up on in terms of DRAM. 32 gigabytes is a perfectly fine storage server. However, with dedupe, this is something, especially in a Windows server, that will use memory available and will use CPU available to do as much as you can. So we express that really in terms of a usage. If you expect how big is your active data set that you expect to be running dedupe on, that's a measure of how much you will consume in terms of your CPU and ultimately memory as well. Both of those are together. Without advanced functions like dedupe, you really can get away with a fairly bare bones configuration for a storage server. For a virtualization appliance, it's different. There, what you're looking for is running workloads. So there, it's really all about number of cores and number of sockets and how much memory do you need to run how many VMs. The consideration there is it's a little bit different calculation than if you're thinking about data centers and say, public or private clouds. Those operations, you're trying to squeeze out every last cycle and every last byte out of your memory to be able to run as much as you can to have an efficient operation. When you're putting together a business or a branch in a box, really what you're trying to do is simply run the business. And the businesses typically don't expand their workloads as rapidly as, say, a hoster business. So really, it's more of a few sizes can fit all kind of a box. And it's really just about how many workloads, how many VMs do you think you'll need to be able to operate your business. For networking, this is where the other difference comes in. Mostly it's the same. In fact, we had to give a little bit of guidance as far as the inter-node communication. It used to be it was just really about the heartbeat. We've moved on now, and so now with things like live migration and the ability to do clusterware updates that drain nodes of workloads, the inter-node communication actually can take advantage of a high bandwidth connection. So we actually say, hey, you can get away with a 1 gig E commodity connection, but definitely take a look at 10 gig E connections. We will, Windows Server, for example, will scale linearly with the bandwidth of the interconnect connection all the way through 10 gig, for example, on live migration of VMs. So that could be an important thing, again, depending on the workload. The other thing about networking is for storage. You've heard a lot about SMB Direct and the usage of RDMA. That really is a storage feature. That feature was primarily put in place to enable file shares to be used as the primary storage for Hyper-V and SQL Server. To make that work, we, of course, had to produce something that was competitive with, for example, Fibre Channel SANs. RDMA allows us to minimize the cycle usage that we take away from the Hyper-V workloads, for example, and give very good latencies to the file server. And so you may have seen some numbers where we're actually seeing, without a lot of tweaking, the ability to get within just a few percent of direct attached storage with a file share. So that's important, but it's primarily these days still a storage server concern. With a business or a branch in a box, a lot of times all the work is happening in the box. And a lot of times you're perfectly fine with a 1 gig E connection to the to your ISP or to the headquarters. So different considerations. And then finally, drives. Similar again, in this case, it's really just more about, do you need high performance? Where do you need SSDs, for example, for bandwidth? Storage server, important. You're trying to consolidate a workloads from many different VMs, for example, into a single box. You're going to easily want performance. For a business in a box, possibly not so much. You really need probably more capacity and a minimum level of performance. But unless you're doing things like running a heavy workload of SQL database applications for a specific business, you probably can get away without having to invest a lot of money in the storage side of that box. So things to think about from your side, it's things to think about when you're looking at specs of products in the market and exactly what do you need for what application. Now, one of the things that's true about these is it's not the kind of thing where I think anyone's expecting all the partners to tune each box for every specific sale. It won't really work. What we really have to do, though, is even though we're trying to produce and work with the industry to get a volume platform, you have to be a little bit aware of what's inside, just to be able to meet the expectations of the application. And one of the things that we realized we had to do is to make sure that expectations would be met, that people, when they're buying these boxes, would not have a shock or bad experience when they actually put their workloads on them. So that's why this kind of information is pretty important. Okay, the other question besides why are we doing this and what's different about servers has always been for us, great, where can I get one? That was the biggest question I've had to answer over the last 12 months since we first came out with this. And so the next section, I want to actually show a little bit about the systems that have come out since we first announced this whole program last year. So bear with me. It's a lot of names. It may not seem like it's all relevant to you, but I think you'll get the point that it's when it comes to be about choice, you want to see kind of a marketplace. So last year, when we came out, we basically announced the program and we announced that we were working with some key partners to produce some systems. In fact, in this kind of a talk last year, we actually brought a bunch of prototype equipment just so people could actually see it functioning. That's the level we were at a year ago. Things have progressed, and what I want to do is let you know that in the intervening months, we've worked with partners to bring out systems, and there's been a lot of activity to introduce real solutions in the marketplace. These examples show work that's been done by Fujitsu, by Quanta, and by HP, for example, to launch systems on Windows Server 2012 with Cluster in the Box. So there have been boxes that have been coming out all along, and then so I want to give an update now on the boxes that we have. So, for example, Quanta is now released their box. So this is a two-node, 12-drive system, dual-socket, Sandy Bridge CPUs, and it supports today storage spaces as the storage solution. It's going to be, basically, there'll be qualifications going on to bring out an LSI Synchro version of it. HP has released its Windows Storage Server 2012 version of their box. This uses their own RAID solution to produce basically a NAS appliance. It's a different form factor. You can see one of the things that comes to light here is I think we're on track for the goal of having differentiation. There's, without any requirements for form factor or function, we've encouraged all the vendors basically to do what they do best. Design great hardware, bring it to market, just satisfy these goals. Fujitsu actually took one of the systems they had in market, this data center in a box, the BX400, and was able to qualify it using storage spaces as a storage solution. So part of the storage subsystem was able to use the in-the-box solution, and basically they've released this box as a cluster in a box using Windows Server as the entire solution. It keeps going. So Fujitsu also released earlier this year at CPIT a smaller version of the cluster in a box. So this is the 12-drive solution, again, two blades, that supports basically either, I think it supports across the spectrum from storage server to server. WeWin has now their systems under evaluation. You might notice some of these names, for example, WeWin and Quanta, these are ODMs. One of the things we had to do is expand our conversation in terms of who produces servers all the way to the design manufacturers, because a lot of the root of many systems coming out today start with the design manufacturer. And there's more. So at TechEd this month, we've now had more announcements coming of other kinds of systems. This is an interesting pair. These are both solid-state storage solutions. So Violin is known for enterprise-class storage on a proprietary base of flash storage. It's purpose-built for high-performance IOPS for the highest, most demanding workloads. Turns out they're a good example of this convergence of hardware. They have a proprietary storage subsystem. However, the controllers they used to implement their system were standard server controllers. So they're actually able to bring Windows Storage Server onto the box, run and qualify it, and plan to release a little bit later this year a system that supports Windows Storage Server directly. S-Tech, interesting. They're known for enterprise SAS SSD drives. They've produced a system using those drives, using Windows Storage Server, to bring out a high-performance storage subsystem based on SSDs. So it's a couple of examples of enabling now not just simple functionality, but actually now getting some specialization. So if you need regular servers, simple capacity for compute, that's great. If you need high-end IOPS and throughput, there are solutions coming to market for that. Think of it as trying to give you everything you had in servers. The more we get these kind of solutions showing up, the more the technology disappears. It continues. So XIO and Dataon. So XIO is known for their sealed storage brick. Again, a similar story. Their technology and value add is primarily in the storage subsystem. Their controllers, their servers, are standard industry servers. By combining the two, Windows Server with their proprietary storage subsystem in a clustered fashion, they can produce a cluster in a box. Dataon is one of the systems we're highlighting here, bringing out two different systems, one with storage spaces as a storage subsystem, the other one with LSI Synchro, the clustered RAID controllers. Two partners we were able to announce. This is interesting. Hitachi has announced they're working with us on a couple of solutions. This is actually pictures here of a prototype system that they're building. They're coming out with both a 12 and a 24 drive solution later this year. And then IBM is working with us on a similar solution. These are both kind of top-tier OEM solutions, taking time to bring it out. I think the key thing here is to realize that just about, and you'll see this in the summary slide, just about every producer of servers now is looking at these solutions. So as part of the message here is the choice is large. A couple of very interesting product launches happening at TechEd this month. The first is LSI. So we've been working with LSI for a few years on bringing back clustered RAID controllers. If you've been in the industry for a while, you might remember back prior to Windows Server 2008, where it was a common feature of RAID controllers to support clustering. If you ever worked with them, you might not have actually been very sorry they went away in Windows Server 2008, because that was some of the most painful technology to bring to market that literally there was in the storage industry. What we did was we worked with LSI, and LSI basically, the goal here was to get, in terms of choice, market-leading RAID, the most significant footprint of RAID on the planet in terms of server systems, bring that back to a clustered environment so that the servers that are being produced today have the option of basically being clustered. So SynchroCS does that. Just for a reminder of what it means to bring something back, it's all about requirements. And so previously, one of the reasons that a lot of these solutions didn't live up to expectations was because there really were no performance or failover expectations for how they worked. Previously, clustering might tell you that you will eventually restore your workloads and you may get most of your data back, but that was sort of the promise of clustering. To bring availability all the way to the customer promise of uptime for your data and your workloads, we had to increase the level of specification. So for example, failover of the LUNs has to happen in 5 seconds for all the LUNs it supports, or up to 100 different LUNs. It's not an easy spec to meet. It takes a lot of work to take the firmware and basically test it to make sure that this works in a robust fashion. We were interested in making sure that it was a enterprise level resiliency. So for example, we had to have solutions for things like RAID write holes in your implementation. We encouraged write mirrored write back cache, although you had to meet all of the same data retention failovers. So we produced actually a separate validation kit for this. So anybody producing systems that use this hardware actually has to pass an additional round of tests to make sure that it's validated the integrity of the data and the timing of the failover within these specifications. So it's a pretty heavy lift, and it's really gratifying to see the product coming out and launching this month. It'll enable a lot of systems to be able to move into this marketplace. The other interesting thing, and there's been a lot of buzz going around, is Dell has joined the parade of systems. They've introduced their PowerEdge Vertex system, and I'll show a little bit more here on the table about what's inside. The key differentiator for it was it's the only 4-node system on the market today. And part of that's because of some of the clever design they did inside the chassis components. It's also the only one that's designed for office-level power and acoustics. So they took on the challenge of going to the expanded market where you really could put a box like this under someone's desk. And you can see, actually, it's the fact that it's standing in a tower configuration here is sort of that indication that they've targeted very specifically a certain part of this market. So if you look overall, there are a large number of systems, large number of partners available today. And so we're basically we think at this point the solutions are there, and it's a matter now of getting usage and case studies available so that people can actually get more examples of how these are solving real world problems. So with that, what I want to do is switch over and actually take a little moment to highlight some of the hardware up close and personal. So you might notice one of the differences I have here when I hit this switch is we have a video camera in the room. So part of the thanks for coming here is we took the time to borrow some hardware off the show floor. And I want to show you some of the stuff that we're actually working with. And you'll be able to see all up on the screen. So let me take a minute over here. And I'll start off first just with a simple card. So this is the LSI Synchro CS card. And see if you can get that close in the mark. So you can see this looks just like a standard RAID card. And the interesting thing is it is. In terms of the hardware, it's a standard RAID card. What's different about it is the magic of firmware. So all the work that had to go through to make this clusterable had to all basically be done to use the existing hardware in that way. Now, I'll point out a couple of things. Besides the fact that it's a RAID card, notice there's a battery attached. Another thing you might is the standard expectation for RAID. I mentioned before about the convergence of storage hardware and server hardware. And if you think about it, really, these days, there's really just been about three things left differentiating those two. Typically, in terms of the difference between a storage server and a regular server, you're going to basically have whether or not the solutions has a backup solution for memory, for example, a battery here. It's going to be whether or not the system provides a connection to storage. Dual connections of storage, and then also whether or not there's a high bandwidth connection between the two nodes so that you can have direct connection, for example, fast failover between the controllers. Those three things, basically, high bandwidth connection between the nodes, battery backup or some way to backup so you can have a high-performance cache solution, and then finally, dual-ported storage to allow failover. Those are really the three remaining things. So I'll show you here. This product takes care of two of them. One of them is the battery backup in terms of being able to keep a mirrored write-back cache in hardware supported across node failure. And the other one is actually just using the standard connections you can see here, these SAS connectors. So in the LSI Synchro CS product, they use these SAS connections as the high bandwidth internode connection. So a 6 gigabit stream connecting with multiple lanes connecting two controllers is not a bad way to go. If you look at storage servers today, even some of there was a storage bridge bay, SBB boxes, for example, have long had non-transparent bridge connections between the PCIe buses. These days, you can often get away with a 10 gig E connection, or in this case, using SAS as a direct connection to accomplish the same goal. So that's the LSI Synchro CS. This is the DataON solution. This is their 12 drive two blade product. Let me show you it as far as the blades go. If I'm able to pull this out, I'll show you the third aspect. So this is one of the blades. And if you look here, in fact, this one is using the Asyncro CS card as its storage subsystem. Dianon is actually shipping products both with storage spaces as well as Asyncro, the full spectrum. You might notice there's this extra board that's on this blade. And notice that the Asyncro card is actually directly connecting to this extra board. So this extra board basically is where the SAS expanders go. So there are dual SAS expanders in the box. There's double connections, and through the back plane, this allows the nodes to communicate and allows, basically, it's the equivalent of a built-in high-availability JBOD in the box. And so that's the kind of the third aspect of these boxes that would previously have separated them from being a high-end storage versus a server, is the built-in direct connection expanders to allow you to have dual-ported storage in the box. So storage comes up again and again. Remember that it's not just a storage product. You need storage as part of the the compute, networking, and storage to create a full-blown system. So solving the storage problem not only gets you a good storage box, it gets you a regular Hyper-V virtualization appliance as well. So finally, I want to show this. This is the Dell PowerEdge Vertex system. So a couple of the things to look at here. One is it has room for four blades. So one of the things to realize about this is, that's different, is that these blades are standard Dell PowerEdge blades. So Dell was actually very clever in their design. They put all of their work into the chassis and and avoided reinventing the blade, the disk drives, and the power supplies that basically would work in any case. So with the standard blades, what they really came up with instead was the beauty of this is actually in the work inside. So if you take a look inside here, you'll see there's some interesting things. For example, all of these modules, these fans. So one of the things that Dell had to do is they had to find, to be able to achieve office acoustics, they had to go find and qualify a whole new range of fan components and to be able to get the same airflow, but for a lot less decibels. So hot plug, toolless components inside most of this box. The other thing that Dell has done, if you look here, this component right here, there's actually two of them. You might see that on top and bottom. This is how they're able to produce support four nodes using a standard storage solution. They use a switched PCI bus to share the PCIe bus among the four nodes. And notice that it's two controllers. It's redundant, so they avoid single point of failure. But what happens is these four nodes are able to share the storage subsystem amongst them. So interesting thing, while it's using the Dell RAID controller, it doesn't need a special technology in the RAID controller to provide connection between the nodes. That's provided by the shared PCIe bus. However, what they do need is, you notice that there's actually room for a second board. They will be able to use the same technology that's used in other systems for clustering to provide a redundant component that can provide failover within the box. Notice up here as well that one of the things about a shared PCIe bus is it gives you a lot of expansion. So this component, this area will hold full-length PCIe cards. This area holds shared low-profile cards. A lot of expansion inside the chassis to provide a cluster in a box. So overall, you can see that this is a great example of where this can go. The possibilities here of taking standard server technology, simplifying it with very, very innovative chassis technology to provide an overall solution that can go into small businesses and give availability to places that otherwise wouldn't have been able to touch it. So any questions at this point on the hardware at all, any of the components, anything like that? If you'd like to come up afterwards after the session, come up and take a look at more of this stuff. We'll be happy to talk more about it. Any questions you might have about what's inside these guys. Okay. So with that, great. So that's the hardware. Let's now take a look at the other half of this, customers. So one of the things we see now, we think right now we've solved the problem of the right hardware available from the right partners. The thing now is to start seeing more examples in the industry of people deploying these boxes. Because a lot of times, what I expect is true for most of you, if you have a need for a server, you know what to buy. There hasn't been a huge change in server technology for a while. People have their favorites. They have their favorite dealers. You know what to deploy. So to make a change in terms of what you're looking for, it's going to take some examples. So what we try to do is, and that's a common question we've gotten a lot, is can you give an example of somebody who's deploying and using it? So luckily, there's a company called EdgeNet, and this Michael Steineke was kind enough to participate in filming a case study. So rather than let me tell you more about it, let me just play this video. It's a short, just a couple of minutes, but it'll give you an idea of of the problem they're trying to solve.
EdgeNet is a software and services company. We've been moving most of our software to software as a service over the last few years. We support large enterprise customers like Home Depot, Lowe's, and AutoZone. The software and services we host for our customers help them sell more. We have complex configurator applications, guides that help sales associates find the right product for their customers, as well as design solutions to help customers build complex outdoor projects. EdgeNet has three offices, Milwaukee, Nashville, and Atlanta, and we've been able to take development systems, test systems, and put those all in our data center, but we still need to have infrastructure in our local office to help support those users.
Here in the Nashville office, we work with manufacturers to help them categorize their data in such a way that we can then plug that into our configurator software to enable consumers to configure highly complex items such as windows, doors, anything that has a high rate of error or complexity. By deploying the Quanta CIB and the Synchro CS storage solution, we're able to reduce our requirements from a 10U format to a 2U format. We're able to reduce our power overhead requirements, our cooling requirements, and our space utilization requirements.
Simplicity was key in looking for a solution for my branch offices. When I heard about the Cluster in a Box program from Microsoft, I was able to partner with them to become one of the first testers of the Cluster in a Box system. With their Out-of-Box Experience, or UBI, you're able to set up a cluster without knowing anything about Windows clustering and have the system up and running in a matter of minutes. The other great thing for the Cluster in a Box is to scale out file server storage target for SMB. Using the Cluster in a Box as an SMB storage target helps you leverage the LSI Synchro Controller's high-speed storage capabilities to give you low-cost, high-speed storage you can target towards certain hypervisors. So if you have something that needs high-speed storage, you can have that very low cost with the Cluster in a Box with the LSI Synchro cards. With our current configuration, my network engineers need to know how to manage a SAN, zone fiber channel switches, as well as work with the operating system on a two-server cluster. With Cluster in a Box, they really only have to worry about the two-server cluster and spend the rest of their time working on other things and supporting our software engineers and customers better. With Cluster in a Box, I've been able to remove all the complexity of having fiber channel and a SAN. Using the Cluster in a Box with the LSI Synchro card with shared storage, it's given me greater performance and greater manageability and less cost.
Interesting business. I'll tell you a little bit more about kind of what they have in the next few slides. They're actually a distributed business, even though their product really is an online product in terms of databases and analysis tools. But they have the equivalent of a kind of a headquarters as well as branch offices located in the eastern United States. So they are actually able to use this box in the two different scenarios. One is an office branch office consolidation, and the other one is as a storage system in their headquarters. So this gives the example of kind of their workload in their branch office. And I'm sure the idea would be this is nothing particularly unusual. A variety of applications they need to support a current set of hardware that is designed to around the hardware that was available in the marketplace. The idea is to simplify by moving everything into a single box that not only takes up less room, it's less maintenance, it's an easier growth path for them to expand than dealing with their current components. So overall, the idea here is that they're an example. One of the things we're looking for is all of you. So definitely interested in hearing from you. If you're going through and looking at these systems, evaluating them for your business, love to hear more from you about the problems you're trying to face and if you're interested, trying to get more awareness of the kinds of applications people are finding for availability. Other ways to talk about this. I talked a bit about the two different applications. So one of the things, even though, again, the Cluster in a Box, we're seeing this is really, in some sense, the future of volume servers and from small to medium, even to large businesses. To start out, you have to target some specific scenarios. There's really two different types that we see as the primary markets today. One is the everything in a box, small businesses and branches, and the other one is as basically a high-performance storage server. So what this tries to do is break down the problems of each of the different scenarios in terms of what the expectations are. So you can see for the top two, a lot of the assumption is you need the simplicity, you need the availability, you need price. All of those have to come together to allow a business to be able to use it. In fact, what this is what we think was behind a lot of the pent-up demand for availability. It had grown, but there really was no solution for it. So identifying exactly the problems to be solved here was important. On the bottom is storage. And so the other thing about this is there really was, in some sense, a separate large investment in storage in Windows Server 2012. If any of you have been to some of the sessions talking about the feature lift that we did in storage, both in 2012 as well as coming in R2, it's pretty big. We've really tried to join the mainstream server market, storage server market with this release. But to get in there, you have to basically be performant and you have to provide a certain core set of features, but it's a different marketplace. One of the things I wanted to highlight was the way some of the partners are actually targeting the markets. What our advice really was, don't produce yet another technology platform when producing these boxes. Think beyond the capabilities, the CPUs, the RAM. Think in terms of who you're actually going to be selling this to, because in some sense, you need to produce a solution. So an example of that is, for example, Dell. Dell's done a very good job of targeting and investigating specific business segments for this box. One of the things that was impressive working with them over the last few years has been their attention and focus on understanding the different markets that these kinds of systems belong to. In some sense, they're helping blaze the trail to get people to understand where these can apply. So these categories are actually theirs that they identified as part of their research going in marketing going in for Vertex. Even their materials are focused on specific types of businesses. Here's some examples. So small business, healthcare. When you say a category like a business, there's actually many different flavors, of course, for what that means. And you guys represent them. You maybe either implement them yourself or you work with many customers that have different needs. Understanding exactly what it takes to get into a hospital or what it takes to get into a small business or a restaurant, it's an important part of what to expect from a solution provider. And just like a lot of the technology today, things are moving toward full solutions. So when you're looking for a box like this, it's important to understand what exactly you need for either your business or the businesses you're selling into. And this is a good example of the kind of stuff that is actually part of the change that we think in the server market. It was very simple for many years to produce fundamentally standard commodity hardware and allow you guys to basically buy what you needed. For these kinds of solutions, as we're moving basically up the food chain, packaging, solutions, software, tuning are all very important parts of the overall box. Back to the flash solutions I mentioned, the same kind of thing is going on with these. These are being specifically brought to market to target certain areas that require high bandwidth, high transaction count kind of businesses. So as these are being brought to market, these companies, for example, in this case Violin, and in this case S-Tech, are both directly investigating customers that have high bandwidth transaction requirements. For example, financial firms in Wall Street that are looking for ways to streamline their business and yet keep up the specs as far as how many dollars per minute they can actually make. So examples of what previously had just been a lot of technology, a lot of advanced technology, kind of like Windows Failover Clustering, really the goal here is to make it disappear. And making it disappear means making it really, really easy to buy in any form that you would like. Okay, so with that foundation, I want to spend the last section of this talk here talking about Windows Server 2012 R2, because there's some stuff coming that we'll be able to make use of this hardware. One of the things that we realized is that it takes several years to make a change in server hardware, especially a change of this magnitude. What we're talking about really is trying to re-spin, in some sense, what a server means to a small business or branch office. We can't be changing it at the same level at the same pace as the software. So the thing about this one is, systems that I showed you that are in the market today, it's the same requirements, the same specs moving forward into R2. We didn't up the requirement level. We're assuming that the same hardware will be there. So basically it means that investment today is fine. There's nothing that this systems will scale at least through R2 in terms of our capabilities. What we did do though is to think about the solutions in terms of new configurations and new scenarios. So when it comes to the new features that are coming in R2, if you've been attending the sessions, there's a lot of stuff coming. Hopefully, a lot of stuff that will make a lot of sense to you. It's an amazing turn for 1 year. But what we in terms of these boxes, there's a few things that'll basically make the scenario better. So the same kind of things when it comes to scale out file servers and performance for SMB file shares. A lot of wonderful things coming that'll just make these boxes operate better. So we're encouraging the partners to qualify, and you should look forward to seeing the same kind of solutions today move up to R2. There's a couple of things, though, that actually are worth highlighting. One is built into the box now, we support four-node qualification. So we're actually looking forward to seeing more four-node solutions. Four nodes kind of the sweet spot for a virtualization appliance, where you want to have enough nodes to pretty basically provide workload coverage as well as some specialization for management. The other one that I wanted to highlight, though, is probably the number one asked for feature that for storage spaces in Server 2012. So for that, for spaces, what they brought to the clustering arena this time was support for parity spaces, as well as recognition of SSDs. So those two together were probably the primary things that people were looking for that limited deployment of systems, clustered systems with spaces. So coming in R2 is support for both of those. And so what we decided to do is provide some guidance and actually sort of a challenge to you. In the next few slides, I'll be talking about some specific configurations that you can actually build yourself. You don't have to actually get a specific cluster-in-a-box hardware just to try it. You can build out of your own components and give this a shot. We think that the performance has met the bar for reasonable capacity as well as performance, but want to try and get your feedback on it as well. So there's enough information in the following slides to do this. So there's two basic setups that we tried out. There's actually more you can do, but we want to keep it simple in terms of basically a capacity SKU and the first step up in terms of performance if you wanted to add SSDs. So the first thing we put together was a system of all hard disk drives, two different configurations, one with 12, one with 24 drives, in using parity spaces. So the big jump for this really is going from mirrored, and again, parity mirrored is the terminology for spaces. You can think of it in a way as RAID 10 and RAID 5. So the big improvement here is that for disk utilization for parity spaces, you can support up to 8 drives in a parity space, and which gives you increased 87% effective disk utilization compared to the 50% for mirrored. So what we did is we took a specific system. So we took a Quanta system and configured it, and we gave you the specs here in terms of dual processor, a lot of memory. Actually, in the end, this memory was not a limiting factor at all. This is actually using, so with spaces, it's using a SAS adapter, dual connected drives, and these are basically all hard disk drives, and we set up two configurations, 12 and 24. So for these, the way we set it up was the configuration is it's a parity space. The previous slide gives you the setup for it. So in terms of the specifics of it's a single pool for spaces, if you're setting this up, the best way to get performance by default is put all the drives into a single pool, even though it's for, say, a two-node cluster. The meta overhead of administering a single pool on one node versus two is very low. It's not actually a mainstream runtime loading issue, so don't worry. A single pool is the best way to go. And then carving out two parity spaces out of it. It gives you the details here. 8 columns. A column in storage spaces is kind of the equivalent of a drive. And then the interleave is 256. Think of that as basically the equivalent of the minor and major stripe in a RAID set. So basically, it's setting it up trying to optimize as much as possible for reasonable performance overall for sequential reading and writing. So if you take that and put it together, these are the numbers that we come up with. Now, if you notice, parity RAID 5 is not designed for performance. It's designed for effective capacity utilization. So what we did is, and we did the numbers here, basically trying to show a simple config. And the other thing we did for you here is, I'll admit, we did not do a significant amount of tuning for these numbers. The idea was we put system together, got the basics in place, but we didn't, for example, go to extreme lengths to try and increase the sequential read speed, for example. Didn't go to extreme lengths to tune up the random writes. So this should be numbers that if you put the system together, you should be able to reproduce these. And the question is, see what it does for your business. Is this reasonable performance for you to basically put everything together into a single box. When it comes to a storage, a high-performance storage subsystem, this may not be what you want to have. But when it comes to, say, a business in a box or a branch in the box, the question is, does this give you the right performance, the right economics as far as a way to build a box to produce an entry-level SKU? Now, the next one we did was saying, okay, great. One of the key things in spaces coming in R2 is support for solid-state disk drives. So in 2012, you could use solid-state disk drives. The spaces wouldn't do anything special with them. It would treat them just like any other storage drive. In R2, it recognizes SSDs, and it can use them in two different ways. This is one of them. So this way uses them as basically the write back cache or the write log, the journal for a parity space. What it does is it stages all of the writes on the SSDs and then destages them over time in the background, so it gives you kind of a performance boost as you're moving, as for example, for random writes. The other way to use it is data you might have heard about is tiering. They actually do heat map and they do data placement using SSDs. Didn't play with that here. Encourage you to play with that feature as well. But in this case, what we did is we took the same basic set, 12 drive and 24 drive pools, and added the minimum SSD investment that you would have, so two SAS SSDs into the pool. Two for in the 12, so you have a 10 plus 2 situation, and then for 24, the same two. The key thing is it's not the size is not the critical factor. It's really just the speed of the SSD that storage spaces takes advantage of. So did this, basically, did the same set of tests. And you can see the big improvement was, as you might hope for, was be about an 8x improvement in random writes. So it's using the SSDs to stage the writes, so then later it can destage them and consolidate them and do appropriate things to give you the speed back in a full stripe update, for example, in a RAID 5 parity space. If you notice, I didn't highlight it, but actually the sequential read and writes went down slightly, which makes sense because in this case, the main data now is going to less spindles. So we have 10 spindles supporting the RAID set in the 12 drive case, only 22 instead of 24 spindles doing the main data set in the 24 drive case. So slightly, you pay a little penalty in the overall sequential, but you get a big boost in terms of the random writes. So data you can work with. Again, these are not numbers that we spend a significant amount of time tuning. We want to get something that you could actually reproduce in your labs. So two questions for you. One challenge and one question. Challenge, try this out. You can actually take this and take the preview release, set up a couple of servers, get SAS connected JBOD, and see what happens. And the other thing, the question is, does that work for you? How close is this to something you could deploy? What scenarios does it work for? What scenarios does it not work for? I'd love to hear back more on the whole thing. But there's enough information in these slides, basically, for you to actually reproduce it and make progress. Okay. So what to do next? So quick summary of what basically we're asking you to do is, the challenge here is availability in your business. Think about it. Think about solutions. How would you deploy it? One question is why would you not make all of your workloads highly available, all of your storage highly available? What's standing in your way? The evaluation release for R2 is available. Give that a shot. Love to hear feedback. So let me know, jlovell@microsoft.com. I'd love to hear about this, your situation, what systems you're looking at, your applications, what you're finding works, what you're finding doesn't work. Very curious to get more information out to the general population about kind of what people are playing with. Provide a kind of a summary of all the connections. So for all the different partner things is in the deck, these are the most useful links you can get to go find out more information about the products that are available. In the remaining couple of slides, I highlight some of the related sessions. It's Friday, so you can go back in some of the video on Channel 9, see some of the things. If you want to find out more about setting up a cluster, the PowerShell to invoke to help administer the storage spaces, for example, all that stuff is available for you. And the other reminder is please fill out the evaluation. It's the one way we have to make sure that we're giving you the content that you need. But the message I actually want to leave you with is the overall. So overall, there are a lot of solutions out there. A lot of the partners have come through, and just about all the major names and a lot of the minor names are coming out with systems like this. So overall, the challenge for you is what's in the way of making your business and your storage and all of your operation highly available? I'd like to find out why these solutions wouldn't work for you. We think they will. like to offer a big hand to our partners for helping to show the hardware here. Feel free to come up after the session to take a look and ask some questions about specifics. But overall, we think that availability, the solutions that you've been asking for from a customer base, the products are out there. That in the last year, the partners have really come through, and the releases are happening. More of them are happening the next few months. And so get involved. Figure out what it takes to make your business available. We think you have the tools you need. Thank you.